This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
Welcome to another edition of the spoiler room, a little bit of an impromptu one. I wasn't going to initially do an episode on this film, but then after I saw it, I'm like, well, let's see who would be interested. So consider it almost like a bonus episode, because we do still have our King Kung Fu Big 4-0 episode coming up later this week. But today,
God help us.
Oh, come on. Today, it is May 29th, and I've got a couple of fantastic gentlemen here to help me talk about the second superhero film in a month that we've gotten. And it is X-Men Apocalypse and the Men in the Room. Well, first off, we have returning after showing his film at a theater over the last couple of weekends. He's been hard at work, really promoting it. Welcome back, Cole Meredith. Hello, Cole.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, glad you could make it, especially for this particular episode for X-Men Apocalypse, or as I've been calling it, Acapulco. And, and next to him is the one, the only Scotty Baby Spice Davis. How are we doing tonight, Scotty?
I really, really want a zig-a-zig.
If you don't know what that's in reference to, listen to our last episode, which is a lot of fun, The Spice World. And so tonight, we are talking about X-Men Apocalypse. Now, do either one of you want to give a brief summary on this film?
Take it away, Scott.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, unlike the other X-Men movies, this one opens up several thousand years ago, and we see an image of the very first mutant who had all these powers and was worshipped, like 3600 BC, but he was also a tyrant who was trying to rule the world. And he was betrayed by those closest to him, and he was sealed away for several thousand years. And then we flash forward to 1983, because remember, these first class was 63, Days of Future Past 73, now 83. The CIA accidentally uncovers it because they screw everything up. And in these movies, it always has to be like, our bad. And he gets free. This means that that a lot of the X-Men, both the heroic ones and the not-so-heroic ones, get drawn into the battle against this mutant that's going to cleanse the world of humanity. That we even have some new faces in the X-Men, though we're familiar with them, like people like our first youngish appearances of Jean Grey and Cyclops and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know, kind of a rambling thing.
No, much better than I could have done, man.
Yes, a godlike mutant Apocalypse shows up. Also mentioned in there, we do have our returning characters as well as new characters, and he needs four horsemen for some reason. And he gets four of them, which includes Magneto, who, due to a recent tragic event, has decided to once again be bad, though was he ever good is the question. Okay, so X-Men Apocalypse. Now, I will say, just like in my review, I was entertained by the film. It's an entertaining spectacle. But out of the three big films that have come out, not including Deadpool, because Deadpool is just in a category all its own, I think, this one I kind of had the biggest questions on, which is why I wanted to gather you fine gentlemen and talk about it this evening. So let's start first with Cole. Just briefly, when you got out of the theater, did you like it or did you not like it?
I really loved it, man. I really liked it a lot. I was surprised at how good it was. I remember Scott mentioning about three or four episodes back, just offhandedly, about how he'd like to see more X-Men movies without Wolverine in them. I thought this was a lot better than First Class, for me personally, in terms
of
realizing that potential. First Class gets a lot of crap, but I like that film a lot, too. But I've got to say, man, this is just an exciting film from front to back. And when I think about the movie, I remember just as many dramatic moments as I do completely breathtaking action moments. So I liked it a lot.
And Scott, what about you?
You know, this movie, I swear, I know it's getting really mixed reviews. Probably more so than a lot of the other X-Men movies. I didn't care for X-Men First Class, first of all. I need to throw that out there right now. It had lots of interesting stuff in it, but the execution of the whole movie I just thought was... I didn't like it at all. I thought it was really interesting stuff that was handled in a very juvenile manner. This one, I know it's getting mixed reviews. I'm really wondering which one I like more, this or Days of Future Past. I really liked this one a lot.
Yeah, man.
Now, there are elements in this movie, which I'm sure we'll touch on with greater clarity in a little bit, that do stand out. And I got a weird feeling that when I was watching certain moments of the film where I was saying, you know what, this does not bug me now, but I can see this part bugging me on future viewings. I don't know why I think that. I mean, it's just a gut feeling I have. It might be right, it might be wrong. But, you know, all in all, I thought this was a really intense, totally epic movie. The thing about this movie is that it is so stuffed with stuff. If that makes any sense at all. It is so stuffed with content. There is, not only is there a lot of stuff going on, there's a lot of character arcs that are happening. And I think my friends, when I saw the movie with them, one of them didn't like it. A couple of them liked it, but they said this thing should have almost been two movies. There was so much going on. I said, actually, when I watch this movie, there's a lot in it. It's really like stuffed to the gills in this movie. But I didn't feel that the pacing ever suffered, nor did I think that it needed to be longer. Maybe I would have liked to see a bit more of Mystique's arc, because I thought that was a really interesting arc that they were only able to touch on every now and then.
Yeah, man.
And plus that, I just love Jennifer Lawrence. I think she's so talented. So maybe a little bit more of her, but for the most part, I'm like, no, they handled it fine. But it does not change the fact that when you are done with this movie, I just said, man, I feel like I've just been through it. You know, this thing, I mean, this thing really takes you for just this, a ride that you don't really expect. I mean, you expect a jam-packed, like an action comic booky film. We're in the golden age of them. We have a ton of them. This is the fourth one so far this year. That was unthinkable just 15, 20 years ago. I think you get even more than that because of the character content in this movie. So it's not just a lot of action. It's also a lot of character. And it's an exhausting film, but I think it's a really high quality film. I get some of the criticism about this film, but I don't agree with it. So I think X-Men Apocalypse was really good. Really. I think that of the four comic book adaptations I've seen so far this year, this one is my favorite.
Well, this is going to be an interesting episode.
Hey, you're the one who scheduled it, man.
This is going to be an interesting episode. I was entertained by this film, as I mentioned. I did come out thinking it was a visual spectacle. Out of the three films that DC won, which I will not try to bring up so much, and Civil War, and this one, I had the most problems with this one. And we will get into it in a little bit here. And we'll see if you guys can convince me maybe to see it again. Now, I didn't hate it. As I said, I gave it 3.5 out of 5. I did not think it was phenomenal. I enjoyed First Class, and I enjoyed Days of Future Past, not quite as much as First Class. But I came out of this feeling, I felt entertained, but was wondering exactly what I watched here, going, wow, Singer's really trying to reset himself, especially after the third X-Men film. I mean, he even makes a joke in here on when the kids are coming out of seeing Return of the Jedi, and the one drops the line, well, we all know how the third one is the worst one.
Yeah, that wasn't needed. I have to say that. I mean,
and see, that was my, I like that part.
Oh, God.
I'm like, that was a cheap shot, but I thought it was funny.
I thought it was a great little nod. I'm like, thank you.
However, you know, what's the weird thing is that some people would consider this to be the sixth X-Men movie. Another one would consider it to be the third and the second series of X-Men movies. You know, we had the X-Men, then we had the prequels. This could be the third one.
So, and in my review, I brought it up as well. I didn't say it in this part in the review, but I did say that in here, I felt like I was an outsider looking in through a window, and I was missing half the party. This film felt like it was made specifically for groups of individuals who may have followed the comic and can catch every reference in here and catch all the backstory lines, so when they see a brief visual representation of it, they know exactly what they're going for, whereas those who may not know X-Men are kind of missing out on things. So that was one of the feelings I felt about this, was that it was being a bit fan service, if you will, on some of these characters, yet also changing the characters that some of the fans may have known, but at the same time trying to make all these references that the guy who only watches X-Men movies isn't going to catch. And I think that's where some of the appreciation that many of these people have for this film, and that's great, but for me, I'm like, why is this, you know, I've seen online, I'm like, why is this such a big deal? Well, this happened in the comics. I'm like, yeah, but that didn't happen in the movie, you know? So that's, I guess, where part of the feeling came coming out of it was, well, that'd be really probably, I would probably think this was fantastic if I was a huge X-Men fan.
Well, I mean, there's like a bunch of this movie where, you know, I don't know about the stuff where it's like, you have to read the comics to get it. I think that anything like that is just the elements that it introduces that it might kind of draw upon in later installments, whatever those might be. I did note as I was watching it, just like maybe like 15 minutes into this movie, I said, man, if you did not see every other X-Men movie, you are going to be lost in this film. You're not going to know what the hell's going on.
And I have seen it. But, you know, that opening sequence, which was Gods of Egypt 2, sorry, it felt like it. I'm like, okay, that's their setup for who Apocalypse is. But here's the first question that I posed for you guys tonight who did enjoy it. And I want to state right now as well, I'm so glad you guys enjoyed it and wish I could have seen the film through the same eyes you guys did, because I just thought it was okay. But here's the thing is, this film is taking place decades. This is now, we are 20 years ahead of the events from the first class. How is Havoc, Cyclops' brother?
He's always been Cyclops' brother.
I understand that, but but age-wise, I understand in the comics, and this was one of the first things that got me. Age-wise, we are talking 20 years.
Mutants, some mutants age slower than other people. I was thinking about this, too.
So Cyclops has been in high school for 20 years?
Was he in first class? I can't even remember.
Cyclops?
Yeah.
As far as I know, Cyclops was not in first class.
So he could have.
And
so
he could, wasn't.
He,
in,
could have been, he could have been born between now and between the two, but he was just so always had a big brother like that.
The 20-year difference between him.
I have no idea. You know, this really didn't bug me, man. It didn't bug me. You know, what bugged me more is saying, you know, X-Men came out in 2000. This is taking place in 1983. Sometime within the next 17 years, Professor X is going to go from James McAvoy to Patrick Stewart. That is rough, man. That is a rough 17 years. I don't care if he's one of our more handsome older actors. It's still a rough 17 years.
Wow.
I'm sorry. It's one of the things that got me, and I understand. Yes, okay, mutants age a bit different, but still, it was getting me that this was supposed to be a group that's been around 20 years now. Yeah, I guess that was one of the first things that hit me was when they were brothers, and I'm like sitting there going, "Wow, his parents had one that
There
that
are
much older?"
There are inconsistencies in this movie. So, I mean, let's not forget that Emma Frost shows up in Wolverine and then shows up as a completely different character in First Class. I mean, they're just different, I think Cyclops may have even been in Wolverine for all I know. I don't know.
I don't remember that much of it.
But... No, because we're trying to forget those movies.
Cole, what about you? Did any of the age differences stand out with the characters, or did it not hit you?
No, I mean, I'm sure if you were to go through them and examine them very closely, you could find flaws, but I'm pretty sure there's little things in there that could explain those flaws away, too. You know, I've seen them all, and I don't remember disliking any of them. In fact, I actually remember the second one being the one where I was kind of like, well, maybe this isn't going anywhere. And after that, I thought they were all okay. I mean, I really did. But, yeah, I can't comment on that discrepancy, actually. I mean, I would have to go back and watch the last couple again. But nothing like that stood out to me. It just started, the guy's in high school. He's got a brother. There's new actors now. These aren't, obviously they're resetting everybody except for Hugh Jackman. I don't know. it didn't bug me because if I was to go back, for me as a viewer, mm-hmm. if I was to analyze it like that, I mean, they're already different actors. At that point, it's kind of, you kind of take the old movies as lore at this point.
But I wasn't referring to the old movies. I'm referring to First Class. Days of Future Past.
I still don't, I mean, I get why some people would care. I don't care. Honestly, that's my real take. That's my real take on it. I know it's not very, deep or anything, but it's, I've seen so many actor changes, so many throughout between films, so many interpretations between films. I'm okay with it. It's fine.
Sure, because it's Marvel. I understand.
Oh, so you can't stay away. We're all right. You made it. What's it been? What's it been called? 10 minutes.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, here's what it really comes down. If we can forget that Katie Holmes became Maggie Gyllenhaal, I mean, we can forget. A discrepancy like that in the comic book world,
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you just got to look the other way and be like, But again, I don't remember First Class vividly enough because I thought it was a good movie, but it's not anything I would, go out and buy. Mm-hmm. So I can't comment on it really.
Okay. That's fine. I threw the dig at Scotty D because he really, doesn't like a specific film, and the thing that he's looking away from in this film, is something that comes up when the other film is talked about. So
I don't even know what you're talking about. I really don't know. I didn't even think that other film was as terrible as most people said that other film was.
I'm just giving you crap, Scott. But for me, here's
the thing. You've been wrong constantly tonight. It's fine.
I'm wrong constantly. Thank you.
That's what's going to be there. Change the name from the spoiler room to the Wrongy Wrongerson Show.
The Wrongy Wrongerson Show. Nice.
With the talented Cole Meredith and the handsome Scott Davis.
There you go. But for me, I wasn't trying to be nitpicky, but it just stood out for me right away was in the age thing with where this is supposed to be versus what the characters were. And I understand they're mutants all, but still, it's supposed to be a direct sequel, but yet it felt like it wasn't a complete direct sequel. It was kind of a loose sequel to the other one in parts. But then we get parts with the part that I really enjoyed was after the Egypt big spectacle opening, which I saw it in 2D, and I'm sure it probably looked fantastic in 3D. I loved the Magneto storyline to a point. I really enjoyed that bit. I enjoyed the fact that they had him trying to move on from the events of 73, trying to hide out, and he's got a family and a kid, and he's just trying to live, you know, like a human and try to kind of... And I love that specifically because of the attitude he had at the end of the first one. Here's a guy really trying to change, and, well, events happen. His family ends up, yes, this is a spoiler, folks, his family ends up getting kiboshed, and he's like, well, you know what, this just didn't work. And I loved that bit. I loved that whole first section of it. What'd you think of how they handled Magneto in this, Scott?
Oh, I thought it was great. I might have wanted to see a little bit more pathos towards the end of the movie, where he's a little more conflicted in his, his name isn't this in the movie, but we're just going to call him Apocalypse.
Yeah.
because I don't have time to break up my ancient Sumerian dictionary here. I would like to see more conflict when he goes with Apocalypse, mainly because I don't see Magneto following anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And also just wanting to like really tap into that pain and that rage and everything like that, as Apocalypse does. But I think that overall it was handled great, and there's real those early scenes with Fassbender as trying to start the new life, and he's got the daughter and everything like that. Is really, I mean, it's really well done. It really brings you back to why Bryan Singer is so good for these. It shows how brave he is to tackle some of this stuff. I mean, I still remember when X-Men came out in the year 2000. I was so stoked for this movie because I'd been waiting all my life for an X-Men movie, right? And it's from the director of Usual Suspects. Holy crap. And I'm going to totally see this. And I remember how amazingly brave it was to start the movie out in Auschwitz, of mm-hmm. all things. Holy crap, they went there?
Yeah.
You know? And... They touch upon that pain once again here in a completely different way, but it's always it's that feeling that you get with this character that every time he tries to grasp some hope and innocence, it gets snatched away from him. No wonder he's so moody.
Yeah.
No, seriously, no, because you wonder, like, you know, because we all know secretly that Magneto is wrong because as the films are structured, you're supposed to be on Xavier's side.
Right.
But what he does is he makes you relate to the character. Mm-hmm. It's like, I get it, though. It's like, you know, he's wrong, and of course, once you start killing innocent people, then, you know, I'm sorry, your argument goes to crap as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, as far as, you know, what motivates him, I get it.
Sure.
And I think that it was a really brave thing to do, and I think that Fassbender handles it so well.
Yeah, I think, and Fassbender's actually been one of the highlights. Actually, the relationship between Magneto and Xavier in the first two films is what's really kept me interested in this, and I've loved the relationship that McAvoy and Fassbender have on screen really comes through, and I love that bit. I really do, and that's one of the stronger points of these reboots. So after we get the CGI spectacle, we actually have this serious part, which, yeah, was fantastic. I'm like, okay, here we go. We're getting into what kind of drew me in and made me enjoy these this new set of X-Men films. Cole, what about you? Did you like how they handled Magneto for the most part in here, especially in that first act?
Yeah, absolutely. Scott said it so well. Mm-hmm. It's hard to add on what he said. I would just add on top of that. I think this is probably his best work in an X-Men movie for sure. He's got for my money, he's got a lot more to do in this one than he has specifically in Days of Future Past, because I remember that better. But I really like, you know, some of the scenes he gave him, and specifically, spoiler room, folks, you know, but specifically when he's about to off the people at the workplace, you mm-hmm. know, he's just like, and you're like, holy shit, here it comes, he's gonna get them all. And then, of course, Apocalypse just steps in and turns him to dust. That's such a great sequence. But his performance in that is This is fantastic. Like Scott said, everything that I can't add much to it other than this is Fassbender's best work in an X-Men movie, I think, for sure.
It's just unfortunate that they end it the way they do. Sorry, folks. Yes, this is me being the asshole probably this whole episode, but I loved Magneto up until the end, and I'm talking about the end. I'm talking about he has a change of heart. He helps defeat, along with Storm, who has a change of heart, and they help defeat Apocalypse with the help of Jean Grey doing the Phoenix, which had we not seen X-Men 3, we wouldn't even know what the Phoenix ability really would be about unless you read the X-Men comics. So, but before that, Magneto had his powers amplified, and he basically reached into the ground and started dismantling every civilized city around the globe, killing millions of people. And at the very end, he's helping rebuild the school, and everything is roses and unicorns and rainbows flying out of people's butts. And that got me. I'm like, I love what they've done with the Magneto character, but, you know, he helped kill the bad guy, so yeah, we can forget the fact that he was destroying most of the planet.
Well, he was destroying the cities. Now, I was curious about this, because you kind of, like, were bringing it up in, like, the pre-show a bit. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I might be completely off. They don't really dwell. While they will show, like, you know, the shots of, you know, the Guggenheim coming down and everything like that, and all this magnetic energy coming forward. Do we know for sure that he's killing millions of people? Did they ever say that?
Dude, he ripped up half buildings in New York. He demolished both bridges, all the landmarks, because they go after the landmarks. I mean, what, you think they evacuated all those people?
I don't know. And this is one of those things. I'm not kidding. This is one of those things I can see. This is going to come back to haunt me in later years, I'm sure, because this might be one of those things where when I watch the movie again, it really doesn't sit well with me.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I was not thinking about it to the extent of, well, I will stay away from that movie, but we'll say to the extent of the destruction there's some pretty extensive damage on the previous season of Arrow, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You know, didn't even see that. It didn't like even hit me as that, really.
Sure.
I don't know why, if it was the way they showed it or anything like that, they didn't dwell on it. Other than to say that it was kind of always framed like he's about to usher in the end of the world, but there's still time. It wasn't that, no, he's doing it right now. It's not what I got from it.
And that's the thing, is he was doing it right now. Cole, how about you? I mean, Magneto, he's tearing up every civilized city around the globe.
Well, I can elaborate.
But there's millions of people dying, or hundreds of thousands at least, and many people are not batting an eye at it, yet ye old Superman in Man of Steel.
Here we go.
No, I didn't say Batman versus Superman. I said Man of Steel. He takes out most of downtown Metropolis, and everybody loses their shit. Magneto sits here and destroys most of the civilized cities and half of the skyscrapers in New York and destroys the famous bridges, and everybody's like, this is the best movie ever! So okay, what am I missing here?
Well, I can elaborate. Now, I could be off. I did a little bit of research because I knew you were going to bring this up. And, I mean, when I grew up, I'll make this quick, but I'll back up a bit. When I grew up, we never gave that a second thought when a building got demolished or something like that happened in a comic book, because if you started thinking about that, you're going to take away a lot of the fun of comic books. It was never an issue. Stuff like that happens. Sometimes they address evacuating the city. Sometimes they didn't. But it was never an issue because it's a ridiculous issue. It's a ridiculous issue to have with a comic book movie. Now, the first time it appeared to me, and I did a little bit of research, but I listened to this episode when it was new, and then all of a sudden it was big. So I think there's something to this. It's episode 40 of Fat Man on Batman with Ralph Garman, where they bitch about that for about 15 minutes. And all of a sudden, Man of Steel had this huge flaw because there's skyscrapers being knocked down. And now it's just an issue that you have to address whenever you make a movie, a comic book movie. And I don't see that as a realistic expectation, and I hope it goes away soon. Now, to address this specific movie, I think you're both right. I think that when the bridges are being torn up, it's obvious that there are hundreds of cars in the whirlwind. I mean, there are. But again, it is, like Scott said, left a little opaque. It's not like, I mean, it's much more tastefully done than Man of Steel, I would say, especially since it's Magneto, and it's implied that people could have gotten out of the cars. I mean, it's on the news. They at least show the newscasters saying, hey, this is going to happen in an hour or two. But again, I try not to get too serious about it, because doesn't that always happen? Don't buildings get knocked over in movies that have giant battles? I mean, when did we start caring?
We started caring after Man of Steel.
Well, that's what I'm addressing. I think it's kind of bullshit.
And I'm not talking about you guys specifically, but I am talking about out there and why. And I totally agree with Andrew on this, the lovely Andrew who's been on here, and he was on our Spice World episode, last episode. Check it out. He does say, I have a little trauma involving Batman, and this might be true. But I think it's a little well placed, because this shows right here the masses. I mean, that happens and people throw fit. I've seen people throw fit, and then I see those same users, the same groups, who think, you know, X-Men Apocalypse is great and don't bat an eye at the fact that Magneto destroyed a good chunks of the cities around the world. Which it would have involved the deaths of many people. I mean, you get a skyscraper ripped off in half. And yet, at the very end, it seemed all hunky-dory. He's there with the good guys and helped building the buildings. Whereas in Batman v Superman, Superman had to go to trial on Metropolis, which you can't tell me that storyline wasn't affected by the internets. And Civil War, they get put down in lock and key because they dropped a country which was supposed to have been evacuated before it actually fell. And because they blew up a building where there was the deaths of 11 people, those guys get a freaking accord, become under new. X-Men come along. He rips up half the civilized cities. And everybody's like, you're good. You're all right because you helped kill the bad guy. So we can forgive you. And that's where I'm running into with these, is that, you know, okay, if you're going to criticize one for this, then why not bring it up when it comes up in the other film?
I don't think they really did in Civil War. I think Civil War's storyline was a reaction to Man of Steel. And I think in Man of Steel, it was an issue. First of all, I want to say that I actually agree with Cole's take on this. But having said that, now, I think that Civil War's reaction, just as Batman v Superman's reaction, was a reaction to Man of Steel. It was an actual reaction to it. And I think Man of Steel, the controversy was because there is supposed to be no one more virtuous nor conscientious of innocent human life than Superman. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it was a thing. X-Men, one of the themes has been that no one... It's just like the theme was, even though thematically otherwise they're completely different, on the old TV show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I love. One of the themes was that, no, it doesn't matter what these people have done, no one is beyond redemption. It's one of Charles Xavier's things, no one is beyond redemption. And he's still pulling for Magneto all throughout the films. He was still pulling for Mystique all through these films, you know? It's trying to give him a chance, you know? And that's the tricky part about this movie, is that they now come across themselves against somebody who is just pure evil. So I think that it plays that the reaction to Man of Steel was because of what Superman is supposed to represent. The reason it doesn't matter here is because of what Charles Xavier represents. I think Civil War is just a reaction thing. I don't think it's not necessarily related to either one.
Let's extend it to the world just within the X-Men world, though. We open with Magneto being hunted because of what he tried to do. I mean, he took a freaking stadium and put it around the White House and killed people and stuff, and they're hunting him down for just that and the attempt on the president. And then, what, after he, you know, at the end of this same film, well, he's killed all these people because he was working for, you know, Apocalypse, but we'll give you another chance.
I think he's still going to be on the run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not. Even though he is actually kind of probably more in the cool book than he was, because if you listen, as the people in like the war room are listening, they actually say that Eric Lyncher helped in the defeat of this person.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
They actually say that there. It's like, yeah. So they're going to have to consider that. But I'm sure that there's at least some entities that he's going to be on the run from for the rest of his life. I mean, because it's what you do when you kill people. You have to be held responsible for your actions. But, of course, we're also hoping for rehabilitation and redemption and everything like that. And even he's willing to own up to a lot of that stuff because mm-hmm. – I mean, remember when he's first encountered in the woods, he said, just take me. Just take me. Let my family go, but you can take me. And so I don't think that's a – and honestly, so I don't think it's really – I think that the – I know you're upset because of the other movie, man.
I
don't think it matters. In the sense of this film, I think it has more to do with the theme that anybody can be redeemed no matter what you've done.
Okay.
And it's that eternal, because that's what the theme of the movie is that mm-hmm. no, even though the world gives these people very little reason to believe in it, there is reason to have hope. And in each one of these films, well, except for First Class, because it's a piece of shit, is that there is hope. Mm-hmm. And that hope ultimately saves the day, and that's I think it's a good message. Doesn't mean that he's the nicest guy in the world.
We'll have to agree to disagree on Magneto, and that First Class was shit. But that's okay. I get what you're saying, Scott. I get what you're saying. Trust me, I do get what you're saying. But within the context, even of these own films, I was having a problem with that. You know?
I get it. No, I mean, it's a fair criticism. It's a fair criticism. It is. I just don't agree. No, I'm serious. I don't know. It's not like I'm saying like you're way off base there.
This is what, and I have to separate myself, and I do have to separate myself from social media, because that's what's frustrating me with the fan base out there in the world with all these superhero films, especially with this role of three, is the fact you have the same flaws in each of the films, yet some people go, oh, this movie was great, and then the same flaw or a very similar theme or flaws in another film, and they shit all over it.
Well, you know, there's contingents of fanboys that aren't happy with anything. As I mentioned earlier, as I mentioned earlier, 20 years ago, we wouldn't have believed you if you said that there were going to be that by May, the end of May, you'd have four mm-hmm. huge comic book movies that are like actually ambitious and really like all balls to the wall out there.
Yeah.
Unthinkable. Mm-hmm. That time, no. What did we have? We had like Batman, and even that they were trying to put through a filter.
The Phantom.
As much as we could. I liked the Phantom. But you know, they were trying to put it through a filter. So I mean, and now you got everything, and it's not good enough, because there are some people, not all of them, but there's this very, very, very loud contingent, even if it isn't a big one, who will never be happy with anything, because if they don't have something to bitch about, their life ceases to have any meaning.
Yeah, man. And like when I was saying we earlier, I obviously wasn't referring to anybody that's listening or us, you know. Mm-hmm. I was just referring mainly to just... I guess the internet as a whole, because it's not even the people I talk to on a daily basis, but this notion that, you know, again, in Man of Steel, that, you know, somehow that was a new thing, that there were buildings being leveled when gods were fighting. You know, it's been happening since the movie started. I mean,
Godzilla.
Yeah,
Godzilla. So we'll move past Magneto. Like I said, I really enjoyed what they did with him up until the very last resolution, 5 minutes of it, which I'm sure people could also put at that Xavier used his power to make everybody, you know, kind of not know that he was actually the one ripping people apart. They could have blamed it all on Apocalypse, who they vaporized. So
he did it.
Yeah, well, he did it. Yeah, no, not Magneto. No, never mind. All the metal was leaving. No, it wasn't him. No. But so I did like, for the most part, Magneto, and I did like also the new blood and well, the returning blood. One, I loved Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler is one of the highlights of this film. I loved him. He was as badass here as he was in X2. Cole, what'd you think of the introduction with Nightcrawler?
I thought it was amazing, Mark. I really did. I thought that whole sequence was so well done. And, you know, that was the scene where it was like, oh, man, you know, this is really going to be something special here. And it was just so well paced. And the effect they used for the Nightcrawler is terrific. The character is great. I like how they give him the Michael Jackson coat. And the actually, this movie is kind of a really interesting 80s period piece too, which I had fun with as a side note. But yeah, the Nightcrawler was fantastic. His introduction was great, and yeah, no problems with that, man. It was terrific.
Scott, how about you? Did you enjoy the inclusion now of Nightcrawler?
Oh yeah. Now, even though it's got the worst title of the series, X2 is actually my favorite of all the X-Men movies.
Oh, wow, man.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the flip of you, man. I loved X2, X-Men United, even though the title is crap. And I remember how excited I was when they introduced Nightcrawler in that film. You know, early on in this film, I was getting as excited as I was in X2. I'll be honest with you, because early on, the first time you see him is when he's tossed into a ring with Angel, who is not like the nice Angel that we saw from X-Men 3. You know, the scenes had that same mystery to them and that same kind of, you know, learning who these characters were as you went along. You know, and that same kind of, you know, that nice little spin that you don't expect that really made these characters work. And I loved how they played on all of Nightcrawler stuff, because when we meet Nightcrawler in X-Men 2, which remember might not happen because they've rebooted so much of the series in the last film.
Exactly.
You know, remember when we see him, he's been, you know, abused and everything all his life. He's an adult. Here he's still like a kid and still learning how to deal with things. He's very naive. He's, you know, still innocent. And all of his, you know, powers are mainly used for defensive purposes and everything like that. So it's a real interesting way to get to know him, which was, I think, it was similar to one of the X-Men animated series. I want to say X-Men Evolution was actually kind of like that, where you get to meet him as like this younger person and get a new spin on the character. So
yeah, and I enjoyed him. I thought it was great, his character. It was great to see the fresh blood in there, especially after seeing kind of Jennifer Lawrence's performance in this.
What the hell?
Oh, yeah. I knew it.
What the hell? No. You do not. What is one of my main rules? You do not fuck with the Mockingjay.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are in this because it looked like she was there asleep half the time going, I really don't want to be in this movie anymore.
I do have to say I kind of agree with Mark on the character. I don't think it was her performance. But she, without a doubt, to me, and I love Jennifer, Silver Linings Playbook is like one of my favorite films of all time. But to me, they gave her like the worst cliche blockbuster dialogue of the whole thing, like your jet's built for war, and you know, she was just like, why did her character have to be so stern? Or maybe it's just that they didn't play up the catharsis of her being this hero to so many mutants as well as I thought maybe they could have. But that is like my only complaint, and it's small potatoes, but I do see what you're saying, Mark. Like, it did seem like he was a little too wooden. I don't know. I would have to go back and watch the other ones again. Was the character always like that?
No, I want to, and remember, that is one of my one flaws with it, is that I wanted more of her.
I remember. Yeah.
I think that because there's so much going on, and they're only able to touch on certain things. I think that comes just a couple more scenes showing more of her emotional thing. I got why she was the way she was. She was very stern, very stoic, because she had become a hero in the eyes of the world, and she never intended that. She never wanted that.
Gotcha.
And so she's a survivor. She's just this thing. And then when she looks at the plane, she's saying, "What the hell are you doing? You've got a warplane here. This is a school." You know.
I don't know, man. She was going through the motions on it.
I think the character they needed to have a couple more scenes where the character, you got to see some of that emotional arc, because as I've said, I think she has the most interesting arc in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think that this, and I think that it kind of gets shoved to the back, but potentially hers is the main arc in the story, actually, in the movie. But it gets tossed to the back a bit. I wouldn't surprise me to find out that there's more that didn't get put into the movie, because X-Men First Class was basically Magneto's arc.
Mm-hmm.
Days of Future Past was Xavier's arc. I think that this movie was supposed to be her arc. And I think that if with a little bit more, that would be more prominent.
Which kind of leads me to this film going... There were the parts that I liked were when it wasn't trying to be so superhero-y. And I know that sounds weird for a superhero film, but
yeah.
It's true, though. I mean, the serious parts with Magneto, you know, and with this, I probably would have felt it more maybe had we had some more time with Mystique in here, but we've got so many new characters and references we've got to put in this film for whatever reason. That you don't spend a lot of time with her or most of the characters. Now, so for me, yeah, I felt like Jennifer Lawrence was not into this character, and maybe it was because she didn't get as much screen time, so we didn't get to see more for her character. I'm not sure, but there was just something for me that felt off compared to the way she was in the other two films. In this one, it felt not quite wooden, but close to wooden. In this, and again, maybe had we had a little more explanation of her character, that would have came through of why she was like that more.
It was odd. It was odd. It was odd.
And again, this film is so full of characters and stuff we got to put in that I think she did get shortchanged. You know, just like, let's look at the Psylocke character. Everybody kind of made a big deal. Oh, you know, she looks like Psylocke. We got Psylocke in her. Psylocke gets two lines and a fight scenes that may be equivalent to a few minutes in this film, you know, but they put her in there because the fans, you know, want to see her. At least that's my feeling.
Well, I think they also I think that, you know, Olivia Munn finally got her comic book movie after trying for like the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was like 10 years ago when they were going to do a Wonder Woman movie before the whole reboot, and I think that she was one of the main people up for it, and then of course.
Oh, wow! I didn't know that.
She's been trying to get a comic book movie going for years, because she's she's a super super duper geek. You know, remember she was on that Attack of the Show on Tech TV G4 whatever, and I think her autobiography is actually called "Suck It, Wonder Woman."
So, you know, they people were like, oh, she's going to be in here, and she kind of, you know, was, all right, there she is, and she's gone already.
Let's hope she comes back for a bigger part next time, you know.
Well, yeah, let's hope,
you know,
so.
Kind of like Ryan Reynolds when we saw him in X-Men Origins Wolverine, like, oh,
Oh, God.
That's the Deadpool we've been waiting for? No.
That's not the Deadpool anybody, even Deadpool, wanted. So there was her, and, you know, we had Storm 2, which I would have loved to see more of. That's the thing. This film's so packed. There were some characters I would have loved to see more. I would have loved to see more of Storm rather than her just being seduced by the dark side. But she does it. She's in there, and then she, you know, we see a little bit more of her than, say, Angel, who's just a drunken, Russian, who comes to the dark side.
Who listens to Venom? I laughed so hard when he's getting drunk and he's German. He's getting drunk and listening to Venom.
Like that is such a great scene. God. There are some great scenes in The Sucker. Wow.
Yes.
There was a good scene, and that was it. Angel had his moment. You know, and I guess for me, it's the same thing with all of these ones. There's so many characters in here. I'm like, no, come back for some more of that.
Well, I mean, you know? here's the thing, you know, and like in the first, say, like the first X-Men movie that they did way, way back in the year 2000. Anyway, they had like about, what, five of them. And they even struggled for that. I mean, I remember Halle Berry complaining that she didn't have enough to do back then.
Can they cut an hour out of that rough cut or something like that?
I don't know, but you know...
That's a rumor, that movie was extremely long.
I know there's like about 20 extra minutes like on a branching thing on the DVD, but I don't know. I don't know how much, but I mean, I know that there's more, but... Also, it's the thing with these ensemble films. When you got the comic books, you have years to get to know every little person in there. And, you know, if you're a fan of it, you're going to get to know every little person out there. There's probably a person out there who can tell you everything you want to know about Beak or Marrow, you know, the crappy mutants. And, you know... And you not only get to know every single person month to month to month to month, but usually in about three or four different titles.
Mm-hmm.
Here you have two and a half hours every 2 to 3 years.
Right. And so
And everybody wants to see their person in the movie. So you try to put your person in the movie. I don't think you're going to get like the person for 30, 40 minutes in the movie. You know, you're going to get like, you know, 10, 15 minutes tops. And, unless they decide to do like a TV thing, and I'm not sure that's the way to go yet. First of all, I think it's cost prohibitive, but I don't think it's the way to go yet.
But I mean, that's the thing, is you look at this film, you don't necessarily need those extra characters in here, which gets me to Apocalypse. Okay, so Apocalypse. Now again, I'm not familiar at all really with the X-Men comics. Okay, I know the name. I know he's supposed to be a big ass villain, yet he doesn't seem to be able to do. And he can eliminate like a dozen guys in a room at once, but he needs these four horsemen for him to help take out the world. I'm like, and I think this is a case again with a villain where he's supposed to be uber powerful, and they don't know quite how to handle him. Cole, what do you think? I mean, come on, because they build him up. He's supposed to have a lot of major powers in this, and yet he doesn't when the plot calls for it.
I guess I understand that criticism, but I also, well, first of all, I just thought it was interesting that it was like a Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse type of thing. You know, just because it gives a driving force to the narrative as opposed to just one, you know, lone bad guy kind of stirring the pot.
It also gives them an excuse for adding four more characters, but go ahead.
Absolutely. But what I was going to say is I see what you're saying, but those sequences were so well written that, I mean, I can pick out all four of the initiation. You know, I can pick out each scene. Every time he would recruit somebody, man, that's a scene I've only seen the movie once, man. I can picture it, like, clearly in my head, and I can even quote specific lines, and I can remember the music because it was so well timed and paced and put together. I mean, you're right when you talk about Storm being shortchanged, for instance, but I think you get to know her quite well, and it's obvious his power is intoxicating. I mean, for instance, when he goes into Xavier, you know, I've never felt power like this before. I mean, imagine what it does to Storm, or, you know, I don't know. I can see your point, but I thought he was a formidable presence, man, you know, and I think before they defeat him, you know, it's made obvious his weakness, which is that he doesn't know how to care or love. Storm sees it, you know, when one of his men goes by the wayside and he says useless or fool or something, and Storm sees his weakness, and, you know, Xavier expands upon that. I mean, I know I'm getting a little too deep, but this is usually as deep as comic books go, unless you're Christopher Nolan, you know, and then later Xavier says, well, you know, you will never beat me. Oh, why is that? Because I am not alone. You know, so, it, you know, I think the dichotomy there is that he, you know, he's always alone, even as he's recruiting people. And once they realize that, his power is sort of gone. I don't know. That's what I got from it anyway. Mm-hmm. Did that answer your question? I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Scott, what about you?
I think he's right.
Okay.
I think he's right. Yeah. Now, are we talking about, like, what we're talking about is power? I think that, yeah, I think it's hard to define the character's power, but I think that Cole is absolutely right. He has this power, but it's power. Most of the powers that he has been gained from people and other mutants over the years. I mean, it's more part of the whole. They even say that he's probably gained more powers every time he's transferred from one consciousness to another. He picks up that mutant's power, so all of his power depends others, and yet he still thinks that all the power resides within him. He thinks that this makes him more powerful. No, it doesn't. It makes the other more powerful. You're just a parasite, and that's what and that's the thing. He doesn't know how to hope, he doesn't know how to love, and he doesn't know how. He doesn't realize that even though he depends on other people, he goes out there alone.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't get that you have all these other people. And because of that, you know, that's why you fail. Is that you try to go this alone. It's the classic hero arc. You know, the hero that tries to go it completely alone fails. Because all we have is each other in this world, you know? Yeah. So there we are.
Okay. I didn't get that he was going at it alone. That's why he had his
That's
four
the whole
horsemen.
Point. That's the whole point. Yeah. Well, I mean, he thinks the horsemen are a part of him, and they think the horsemen are there to serve him. And there's no give and take there. There's just what he uses.
Well, he gave them altered amped up power though.
To serve him.
He gave them amped up power.
To serve him. It's
well,
not
yes.
for their it's not for their own self-realization.
I understand
it's
that,
for them. It's for him. It's
right.
Whereas the other
But he's
where,
still he's still supposed to be this epic hero. I mean this epic bad guy. But yet he needs them. He didn't need them. He's a guy, especially from the comics, from the couple research I did after this movie, he was a guy that could go at it alone.
But that's the comics. This is the movie.
Oh, now we're, okay, now we're separating comics and movies.
We've always been separating comics and movies.
Doesn't Rose Byrne explain all this? I'm sorry, I'm confused, Mark. I guess I just don't understand the complaint. I guess I don't understand the complaint.
My complaint is he could walk into a room and eliminate a dozen guys like that without even raising his hand.
Yeah.
And yet at the end, when he wants to eliminate, you know, large portions of the world, he has these other guys do it, and so he's not as big of a badass as what they've been making him out to be.
He's preoccupied, and he's preoccupied, and there's a slight difference between, you know, eliminating a room full of pudgy German steel workers and then blowing up the world, you know?
Yeah, well, I also think he was trying to build a new world of the most powerful. I mean, he makes that clear. It's not like he's going at it alone, but that doesn't discount the fact he's trying to create, like, I guess Hitler is the obvious choice or metaphor there, but there's lots of insert, you know, brutal tyrant mm-hmm. here. You know, he's trying to build a master race of the most powerful mutants. I mean, I guess it was never an issue why he was recruiting people. You know, he needs other mutants to create this weird fetish world he's looking at. I'm not sure what the world he is trying to create looks like, but that's always mm-hmm. the case with these movies, right? They come, they destroy the planet, but what? Why? Sure. What do they want? You know, but.
No, yes.
I never thought it was an issue. I never saw it as an issue, really.
Okay, no, that's fine. Like I said, it was just something that got me with it was how they handled his character. But again, that's just me. I didn't see the same film as many people did.
Was that not true to the comics? I'm not that familiar with that character in terms of the comics.
Well, it's just. From what I like I said, I didn't read much up on the comics, but just a little that I had read up on them, they were, and the way especially some of the fans were talking about it, this guy was supposed to be a lot more badass than what he was in the movie. You know,
okay.
Is where I'm at, I guess.
Understood. No, I understand that. I guess I wasn't aware of that.
I guess my expectations with the villain. With the way they play, you know, how he was kind of supposed to be and how he is, I guess, threw me off.
Gotcha.
Let's put it that way.
Understood.
How he was kind of played out. And you mentioned the dialogue, and man, that dialogue at the end, though, it's a comic book movie, I understand, but when he's in the dream state and he takes on, you know, Apocalypse, and Apocalypse is still kind of beating his butt in the... In the that and Jean Grey shows up in the ether brain and to kick some ass. Does he really have to say "Unleash your power, Jean"? I mean, come on.
I will say that line delivery was cheesy. But I loved that whole sequence. Don't get me wrong, I loved everything in that sequence with like the giant Apocalypse like tossing. Xavier around, and then sure. She appears. I loved everything about that. But as soon as he went, "Unleash your power," I'm like, that could potentially be like one of those things that shows up in like internet memes. I can see that.
That whole sequence of dialogue he had as he's being crushed with it, and he's trying to motivate Gene. I'm like, they couldn't have handled this better. Like, you know, I'm like, does he have to say, unleash your power, Gene? I'm like, I know it's a comic book film, but wow, okay.
Oh, just relax.
And on that note.
This is what happens when you let me drink and talk about X-Men.
Hey, Mark, I haven't had a chance to watch a review yet. What was your star rating for it?
I gave it 3.5 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
See, that's not a bad rating. Yeah, yeah.
I would never guess that listening to this tonight, honestly.
And that's the thing to remind people is that we all did like this movie. It's just that Mark had some very extreme reservations. I had a few reservations, and I think Cole had a few reservations, but Mark's are just a little more pronounced as all.
Mine are pronounced as all, and I guess I'm just exhausted by hypocrisy. But
you got this other thing going on is the thing, you know. And people who follow the show, it's not like it's an invalid opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You got a legitimate gripe. You do.
You know, and I'm sitting there and I'm trying. And that's why I wanted to do this and talk to you guys and get your guys' perspective. And you guys make some valid arguments with it. There's just a few things, though, that you bring up that I guess I still can't quite push past of why I didn't give this a better rating. I still gave it 3.5 out of 5. I still think it belongs and you should see it, especially for Quicksilver. I want to see a Nightcrawler Quicksilver buddy movie because Quicksilver, it was great seeing him. I loved seeing his character. I love how they handled his character. I love the fact they addressed the fact he is Magneto's son and how they handled that bit. I'm like, those were the scenes that I really enjoyed. Like, you know, are you going to tell him I loved that scene. I wanted more of that from the film rather than as much superheroes reference stuff that we got.
I will say that one of the things I did have against, well, it wasn't really even a problem with it, but I think for a lot of people, I know for me, the best scene in X-Men Days of Future Past was the sequence in which Quicksilver takes out the guards in the Pentagon. I think that is a great sequence, right? amazing sequence. And they tried to repeat it here at a crucial moment when the school's being blown up. Gets blown up every few years, you know? It's just like, you know, it's just the way it goes. I think even in one of the movies they mentioned that it gets blown up every few years.
Deadpool mentions it.
Thank you. Yeah, it gets blown up every few years. And there you go. We just had a movie in February saying it gets blown up every few years, and here we are in May, it gets blown up again. And so they try to repeat it in that, which is a very serious thing. And when you get down to it, this is actually the most heroic thing Quicksilver ever did. Because he's a very selfish character, as we get when we're introduced to him in the previous film. And he saves everybody, or as much as he can, anyway. Mm-hmm. And one problems is that how they framed it, though, with the sweet dreams are made of this, and like how he's still like kind of like fixing other people's hair and everything. I'm like, and drinking a tab. I'm like, okay, they're trying to repeat that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not quite as impressive because we've seen it before.
Right. No, and I could totally agree of what they were trying to do. They're trying to capture that magic again, and it didn't quite work. But as a whole, I loved his character and seeing more of him and his kind of story that they played with him, how it paralleled, you know, along with the Magneto and that. And just loved how he was performed as well. That was another plus for me that stood out. I wanted more of those moments and some of that stuff in there. And I don't know, maybe I'm looking for something different now from a superhero film, I guess. But for me, I loved what they did with his character. You know, that scene, especially with him, when he's sitting up there with Mystique, and they're trying to convince him not to destroy all the metal in the world. You know, I love that scene where they sit there, are you going to tell him? You know, and he doesn't tell him. And I loved that bit. I love the fact he doesn't tell Magneto he's Magneto's son. I'm glad they didn't pull that trigger there. That added some weight and some feeling to that scene that could have easily fallen cliche. So for me, I enjoyed the Quicksilver. He was another one of the highlights for the film for me. You know, I liked what they did with his character. You know, and he wasn't just the shtick guy scene. I was worried at first when he went to rescue the Xavier School, but we actually get more with him, which I thought was really well done. Cole, what about you? Quicksilver, did you like him?
Yeah, I actually think that scene was better than it was last time. Mm-hmm. The version of him speeding through and doing all the humor stuff and the moonwalking and other awesome 80s reference, which I absolutely love. I actually thought it was done better, just because the movie absolutely needed it right then. I mean, it really was kind of getting, the joke about the tree being severed, you know, the Xavier's childhood tree, and you had some other good humorous moments, but Quicksilver comes in to save the day, as far as I'm concerned, right at the perfect moment. I think that pretty much kicks in the second act or ends the first act or something. You know, it's like halfway through the movie, roughly. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just brilliantly edited, you know, and I thought the song was great. I thought his performance was great. And I thought the gags they came up with were fantastic. I thought the dog with the pizza was so good. I love that stuff. You know, I love that stuff. Probably because the movie earned it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a movie that's just throwing that shit at you left and right. I mean, I'm actually one of the few people who loved Age of Ultron, but I'll pick on it for a second. I mean, it's a gag a minute, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and lots of these comic book movies are, but I didn't feel like this was a gag a minute. I felt like it earned its gags. You know, they're few and far between. But I love that scene. As I also love, you know, Hugh Jackman's cameo, which I wasn't expecting. I didn't know he was in it. He shows up. It's extremely violent and surprisingly wet. You know, surprisingly.
Yeah!
So,
Thank you for showing blood. Sorry, go ahead, man.
No, that was the end of my little spiel. Mm-hmm. I kind of got off tangent. I just thought we should mention Wolverine once, you know, before the show was over.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can't have a X-Men film without Wolverine.
Well, how did you feel about his cameo, Mark? Did you dislike it, or?
I felt it wasn't needed.
Gotcha.
Or, I like how they went about it. Okay, I did like that, but at the same time, they didn't necessarily need him.
Gotcha.
But they set it up so they needed him, but they could have set it up so they didn't need, you know. It was one of those things where it felt much like a couple scenes in the other films as well. It felt, you know, like it was a bit more fan service than needed to be to move the plot. They could have handled that differently, I thought, but I don't mind seeing Wolverine again, but it's just like seeing Iron Man all the time in every, you know, Marvel film.
Gotcha. I can understand that.
You know, it's great that he's going, you know, at the same time, I'd like to see Spider-Man stand on his own two feet, but he's going to be in the Spider-Man film. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I hear you.
So I guess that's how I felt on it. I liked it. It made me question again the MPAA's rating of what they consider PG-13. At the same time, I thought that they could have done that differently.
I gotta tell you, I really liked the cameo. I didn't know for sure that it was happening. I heard whispers that it was happening, because I don't really watch all the trailers and stuff. I think I think by not watching all the trailers, I don't know. Sometimes people will show up in movies and I'll be nicely surprised by them. Like, I actually didn't know that Moira MacTaggert was in the movie. I didn't mm-hmm. know that Captain Stryker was in, or Colonel Stryker was in the movie. But so that was a nice surprise. I kind of heard whispers that he would probably be in it. I liked how they used him to facilitate not only how they escape from the government facility, but how they get the other people out. They use him as the way to get the people out. And they actually create, you know, they actually create the origin story for the character, you know, after he's had his memories wiped and everything like that. They actually make sure that he's the one, he's the reason that they're the reason that he's free, right?
Wow, I never thought about that.
This is a better thing. This is the one part that personally blew my mind. His immediate attraction to Jean in later movies is not just based on that, whoa, Jean is hot. No, it's based on that when he was at his worst state, his most feral and his most lost, she was the one who reached into his mind and touched his mind and gave him something. And maybe he's not even aware of that when they meet next, but that's what that connection is. I love that. I will say that the Wolverine cameo in this, I liked more than the Spider-Man bit in Civil War.
I'm down with that. I'll go with that.
I liked Spider-Man in Civil War, but as I said previously, they could have cut some stuff out, and I think part of it they could have cut out was Spider-Man. This one, I actually thought they handled it a lot better, and I'm usually the first person to complain that they throw Wolverine into every movie and won't let an X-Men movie stand on its own.
Plus, just to have him run off naked in the blinding white snow, that's such a good image.
It is a good image, and it's an image that's right out of the, well, again, sorry, Mark, but it is right out of, like, the mythos and the comic mythos of the X-Men.
Wait,
that...
but we're not comparing the comics to the movies. You're taking the movies, I believe.
Mark,
you're wrong, because we can only take it by the movies and enter in the comic books.
No. I didn't say this is in a different sense. I was saying that because you were saying the character is not the same as he was in the comic books. I'm saying this is a visual reference to the iconic mythos that they set up in the comic books. Just like how in Superman Returns, there's the scene of Superman holding the car over his head. Well, that's which is basically them recreating the cover of Action Comics number one. It's the same thing. I'm still right. You're still wrong.
Okay, Scott.
I'm not going to be invited to any more of these. I'm so sorry. I'm beating this totally nicely, and it's not coming off as that at all.
So.
It's all in fun.
Oh, I hope
that
so.
Will.
I really hope so, because I don't know.
We're going to wrap this up, I think, because we could go on longer. Again, reiterating that we all did enjoy the film. I just didn't see it as the perfect extravaganza as a lot of people had, and I knew many of the Spoiler Room crew, including the two gentlemen in this room, well, at least one of them I knew for sure, was really going to love it, and that's why I wanted to do this, was to get a different perspective, and you have given me some food for thought on this, and I hope as well I may have given you some food for thought as well on it, because these superhero films, we try to take them by themselves, but there's so many now, it's hard to. It's really hard to not compare them, and especially when you see a superhero film, and we ran into this problem, I mean, it kind of, we touched on this a while back when we were talking about comic book films in general, I think. If you start doing a lot of these live-action superhero films, you find out just how similar many of these superheroes are, especially in their origin stories.
Yeah.
You know? And which are great in comics if you're following that series, but when you start getting the live-action films and you're seeing those similarities, it's starting to feel a little bit more rinse, wash, repeat, you know. And in this one, I didn't have many expectations at all going into X-Men Apocalypse, and I came out entertained. But for me, there was just a lot of glaring things in there, and I will put to bed right now. I am making this declaration on this episode. I will not bring up the DC Batman versus Superman film anymore. I am making this declaration tonight that I won't, because you know, we have to move on, and each one of these films should be taken as their own device. And for me, out of the big three, I found the most problems with, but I still enjoyed it. So, Cole, why don't you give your final thoughts on this as well, and then let people know where they can find your information about your new film.
Right on. Thank you, Mark. Well, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the movie. I loved it. It was. I'd seen my own film probably 200 times in the past month, and that's probably no exaggeration. So when the screenings were done, the first movie I went to out the door was The Darkness, because I thought I'm going to treat myself to a really creepy horror movie, right?
And I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was. we'll just go on record and say it was a letdown, and also say I love absolutely everybody involved, but it was a letdown. Anyway, so, you know, I went to this. This was my second experience in the theater, and, I mean, it was just so refreshing to see rich action and rich characters, rich colors, nice texture. It was a reminder of how the internet lies, because in all of these internet memes, the Apocalypse looks bright purple, and I realized that the critics have been photoshopping his skin. He doesn't look like that in the movie at all. It was just a refreshing experience. And again, because I am online, you know, not as much as you and Scott, I'm not a critic, folks. I'm just a indie filmmaker. I'm honored that Mark even has me on, to be honest, but I don't hear a lot of the negative things, but I do pick up on a lot of it just because I'm online, you know, probably 10 hours a day, you know, and there hasn't been much good said about the movie, but surprisingly, I enjoyed it. Anyways, if you're interested in what I do, which is micro-budget psychological thrillers and horror movies, you can follow me on Shadows and Lovers Productions and Cole James Meredith on Twitter, or you can hunt me down on Horror Roar. That is Horror, R-O-A-R, where we do a lot of original fan art and give appreciation for the horror genre in general. And again, thanks for having me. It's been fun. Scott and Mark, you guys are awesome, man.
Awesome. And Scotty D, go ahead, sir.
I want to just toss in a recommendation for Cole's movie, The Last Great Horror Movie. It is absolutely fantastic. As soon as it becomes available to you, either through a showing in your area or becomes available on some platform, I don't know what you've got planned there, buddy.
I'm working on all of it, obviously.
Because it deserves to be seen. It's a really good movie. It's really good. Cole has a knack for doing these movies that really stay in your head long after they're done. So, and this is no exception. It might even be his best work yet.
Thank you.
So I totally recommend that. Now, going on to X-Men Apocalypse, I really liked it. There are issues I had with it. Yeah, absolutely. And I can see, as I mentioned, I can see certain things that didn't bug me on the first viewing bugging me on future viewing. But, you know, this goes to show why there's been 6 main X-Men movies, and the 2 bad ones are the ones that aren't done by Bryan Singer. this is a good one. I felt like if it has any flaws, it's that it offers so much in 2.5 hours that it's hard to keep up, and you kind of wish you'd seen more of one thing, and not sure if they were able to spend enough time with one thing as opposed to another. But it offers a lot of action. It offers a truly epic storyline, and it also offers a lot of character development and a lot of depth. So, I think it of the 4 superhero comic book movies we've had so far this year, I'll just say like mutant / superhero movies, because I'll throw Midnight Special in here with it. Of the 5, then, I'd say this is the best so far this year. I liked it a lot. You can catch me at movieocrity.com whenever I decide to update it, and I'm still trying to get over some computer issues. I've had to totally rebuild everything I've had here, basically, after everything got fried over here. So hopefully pretty soon you'll see more episodes of Movieocrity. You can catch episodes of that show at vimeo.com/channels/Movieocrity.
Awesome. And their links for their stuff is on specialmarkproductions.com, where you can find all my stuff if you still want to hear what I have to say after you hear me talk about X-Men. you can find all our stuff up there, past Spoiler Room episodes as well as this one. Check out the Spice World one. That one was a lot of fun. We got a lot of great stuff. We try to cover a lot of different things, not just superhero films. We're doing a big 4-0 special on films as well, films celebrating 40th anniversary. We've got 100, our episode 100 is going to drop this year. Not sure what we're going to do for that. A lot of great stuff here on the Spoiler Room. Hope you've enjoyed our conversation this evening, showing you that films are very subjective, and that's what I love about them. Everyone can watch the same film and get something different, and I love how we have a forum where we can get together and have discussions like this. And that's what's always great about films, is there, you know, a film has done something if it can spark over an hour and a half conversation about it. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Check out our other episodes. Please subscribe if you're on iTunes. Rate and comment us. Love to hear your thoughts on that. And we appreciate you listening. So we're going to wrap it up here tonight. Thank you so much. And as always, in the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies. Say goodnight, Jeff.
Goodnight, Jeff.
Goodnight.